George,
you guys keep talking. I need to take a commercial break, if you know what I mean.
Okay, you bet.
Okay.
Okay.
But no, that's
is that where Filament 11 came into being? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's generally what a lot of archives do. They back it up and put it in mobile places. And you just can't have it on one external hard drive. Because if that can go, you're dead. So you gotta have it.
Right, but the problem is, of course, that what George has is tapes,
right,
and not hard drive. And,
but I'm asking, George probably got everything transferred, a lot of it ahead of time, onto drives. He just had
not that much. I mean, I don't think he had. He had some, but I think we ran out of those.
So I have,
well, we can ask him when he comes back.
A lot of guys, what they do, they will transfer it ahead of time, and then they go back and clean them up later before they release it. So at least they got the transfer part.
Yeah, remember this, Walden, we're talking about 700 more hours of tape. That takes a little while to transfer.
It does. But I'm just saying, for example, I had everything on, I had 10,000 cassette tapes, so it took me 6 years on 2 computers, 12 hours a day to get it done, give you an idea.
Okay.
So computers, 12 hours a day?
Yeah, 2 computers, 12 hours a day for 6 years. Every day.
Yeah.
For 7 days a week.
That's crazy.
What just really amazes me even today is when we had our open reels, we had a back room, a huge back room, and great big shelving units with all these 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 reels on there. Now they're on several external drives just on my desk, on a shelf. I mean, it's just amazing what you can fit on these things these days.
Well, again, you guys are running 2 radio networks, and it's a 24/7 process, and that's great. But we're transferring reel-to-reel tapes into the digital world and then putting it up on our website. So I don't think George is going to get 2 or 3 computers and work 12 hours a day on this. I have an answer for him, though. If you're back...
We had a friend who just retired from doing it. He had 8 computers going... 7 days a week, just dubbing everything. Eight times. Yeah, he was.
That's crazy stuff.
Well, these guys were the mate. He had 500,000 transcriptions.
And he still remained married too.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, and so the two major archivists in the radio hobby, they got mobile setups, 4 or 5 shot to get. Cause they. There's just a few handful in this radio that are really self-conscious about it, that spend the big bucks. And I was talking to a guy this morning, just for the dish, everybody, a needle is $200, and he goes through a needle every 100 hours. You know, so it can run into serious cash. So it's just the...
Let me ask a question. Is anybody making reel-to-reel machines now?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. They're pretty pricey. Okay. Yeah.
They are. There are still companies that make new turntables, new reel-to-reels. In fact,
I'm
president of a group in Seattle, and I'm writing federal grants now, just to figuring the preservation parts. It's costing the money, so if the government's willing to give it away, I'm going to pick it up for the preservation part of keeping this going. So,
I've got about 6 reel-to-reel recorders here myself.
You understand. Yeah.
Okay, so gentlemen, here's the answer to your question, George. What should happen if something happens to you? Okay. The same thing should happen to you that would happen to me. I have sent to my family the key names of people I'd like notified. You and Louie are among them, the first among them, okay? So that you would know I'm not here. Also, you would find out the contact person who's going to take over the website, okay? So there's not going to be any issue with that.
Uh-huh.
You should send to your relatives, whoever they are, notes so that they get it. Hey, I have these tapes, and here are the two guys you need to send them to, physically send them to, maybe. Okay, Dennis Hart, Louis Castang. Louis, you need to do the same thing. You need to have somebody in your family, 2 or 3 people, know who to contact in case something happens to you, me and George. It's that simple to do that. I think we really need to do it.
Do I get access to your bank account too?
Well, you wouldn't want that, would you?
That's a rhetorical question. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
I used to think it was morbid to think about that, but you know what?
It's practical. No, you got to think ahead. You know,
I've lost friends in the last 3 years who are younger than I am, and that's what got me.
I know the feeling. Yeah,
I need to do something. So yes, you and George, you and Louis would be notified almost immediately, and the name of the person who's going to take this over given to you, so you can contact them and all that stuff. So. It'll be good. I hope it doesn't happen, but it might. It could, right?
I've got a source.
If you hit the lottery, Dennis, and decide to walk away, then it'll happen anyway, right?
Not going to happen like that. If I hit the lottery, this website.
I have a source for fresh lilies.
Well, you know, here's the thing that that I've been concerned about, which is that ever since I met him online, George has been talking about moving to Florida. Well, then he changed his mind. He's not going to go to Georgia. But I mean,
at the rate I'm going, don't hold your breath. I mean, that could be another 5 years before load up the truck.
I mean, this project that he's trying to get his house ready for sale. He lives in
Oakland, Illinois, southwest suburb of Chicago, about 20 miles south of downtown Chicago.
And he would tell you that he really dislikes the cold weather, but that's not true. I know.
It wasn't cold this winter. It wasn't bad. We had 1 week where it was really cold, and it wouldn't, in my book, really qualify to be a winter. It was so mild.
There are enough contingencies. You know, the other thing is that the remaining stuff that we have is not, the gems that we have on the website right now. We're talking about stuff that goes back to, we haven't even gotten to the 70s yet. Don Imus, Robert W. Morgan, you got people who have what they call great pipes, and Morgan was one of them. But Ted Brown did too, as far as I was concerned. But Ted Brown made a little more sense because he was WNEW, and that was more like, well, he actually worked for WNBC as well, and that's how he got on Monitor. But of course, you know, we talk about a format, and the format is not sacrosanct, because actually, as far as I'm concerned, Monitor didn't really have that much of a format. It was more like, we knew what it sounded like, but it I don't know that there was a...
it evolved.
Well, you know, there were breaks and everything. You know, say you didn't like the beginning, you know, the 1955 material, and a lot of that was hokey, I guess. But Pat Weaver in sometime like maybe 61 or I don't know, sometime in the 60s was lamenting the fact that Monitor had gone
jump the track.
I think it was, and I don't, you know.
What wasn't in his scope of what he envisioned it to be.
Right. I mean, you know, it was not music per se anymore. Rather, the music detracted from Monitor, to be honest with you, I think. Now, you guys like the music. But I figured, well, yeah, there were nice songs and everything else, but it's not something I couldn't listen to here on some other station. And
music is the easy way out. You know, you play a record.
It is.
That trumps, writing a news report or interview, or maybe a comedy bit, somebody cooked up.
Let's get real here. You couldn't continually do content, news and information, or it would have sounded like NIS or NPR, right?
Yeah, you got to have a fair amount of variety to break it all up and give it a little, smooth it over.
Everybody.
I was going to say, Monitor changed its format numerous times, and a big change. By the way, before I get into that, I want to thank Don Spuler in LA for writing. Don, you wrote a few minutes ago. I think I was your first letter on the website. You were, Don, back in 2000. You were the first one, and thank you so much. And you're listening again in Los Angeles tonight. Thank you. Anybody wanting to call, I'm going to give out the number, 714-545-2071. This is the Monitor Anniversary Show. See, I could host Monitor. I'm doing all the IDs.
If I could be permitted to jump in here just a second, Dennis, Mr. Dennis Hart is the author of two Monitor books, not one, but two. The initial one was Monitor, and I can't remember what the subtitle was, but then they came out with a sequel with even more information. Monitor, I believe, was called Take Two, I think it was.
Yes, Monitor Take Two. The first one was Monitor, the Last Great Radio Show.
There you go.
And Monitor Take Two. And the reason that came out is because so many people contacted me after the first one with anecdotes, people who'd worked at Monitor at NBC.
Right.
And I had to do it. I had to do it. And gosh, we had nothing in the way of tapes compared to what we have now. But I'm not sure that the book would have changed in any significant format except for a few more anecdotes along the way here over these last 60 hours. The book covers all of what Monitor was, and I'm very proud of it. Monitor Take Two. Yes, you can buy it through Amazon. I'm not going to give a commercial plug, but there you go. And the website is monitorbeacon.net. My point here, after I've done the station break, and I did that quite efficiently, don't you guys think? The station.
Yes, very good. Take a bow. It's a good read, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Yes,
I've got both editions.
Thank you.
I'm encouraging him to do a third book here, too, but...
I'm just trying to stay upright. Okay. The biggest change in the 60s with Monitor came because of what happened in 1968, the terrible year that we had with RFK killed, Martin Luther King killed.
The Tet Offensive in February, that was a slaughter.
So Monitor was floating along in 67, and it sounded wonderful. In fact, they did these station ID things on the half hour. Monitor, your home for a pleasant weekend on the NBC radio network.
Pleasant where? Yeah.
It was great. And then came 68. And it took them a while to respond, because you'll remember in early 68, this thing called Laugh-In went on NBC television and became a smash hit. And so Steve Lubunsky, the president of NBC radio, got his singing crew to come together and do opens for Monitor, parodying Laugh-In, essentially. Here come the judge and all that.
Right.
And when you got into the assassination period, and that's what it was for a period of time, it was wildly inappropriate, but they could not quite make the transition. You still had the feature stories on Monitor during the summer of 68, which was a horrific summer, and that was okay. But then they went overboard in 69. And Louie and George, and you know this, the difference between the end of 68 and the start of 69 is so dramatic in terms of, now we're going to be very serious. Now we're doing 23 parts this weekend on post office problems around the country. Drug addiction in Alaska.
Cigarette smoking.
Taxes. Your taxes. 29 parts. And here's the problem. That took away from the fun. Temporarily, there was no Joyce Brothers and Arlene Francis gone, and even Joe Graziola cut back. And Monitor, and I'm the first to say this, tried to become so important, it became, I hate to say this, really boring.
Yeah.
It did. They're going to come back in 1970, by the way. And that's why, Louis, we need to get 1970 and George, because they're going to swing back again. Because Lubunsky is gone now. There's a new president of NBC. And they're going to go back to, we need to have a little bit of fun around here on weekends, because it can't all be blood and guts. And remember, Vietnam is just going wild. It's crazy what's happening in Vietnam. But they went too far in 69. I think we all agree on that.
Well, yeah, we kind of dipped in 69 and in 70, like you say, it kind of tried to claw its way back out of the abyss that 69 created.
Well, I think that, the things that made Monitor interesting to me go back to pre-64. And that was, Bob and Ray, they were still on. Of course, Bob and Ray probably were in the 50s, from 55 to the 60s, I guess, beginning of the 60s. But
let me ask this.
Nichols and May, which is, I think, that was those were the two Monitor highlights, as far as I was concerned. You talk about it being boring, is what you're trying to say.
If we didn't have the Vietnam situation, and if we didn't have all the violence in 68, would that have helped Monitor in the long run?
Probably, because you wouldn't have had to have swung 180 degrees from guilt, I guess it was. That's what probably was going on in the executive suites at NBC. Hey, we can't have a fun show on weekends when the world is going to hell. And 68 went to hell. And so now we have to be serious. Well, serious to me was boring. I still wanted to hear Arlene Francis and Kirk Gowdy and Mel Ellen and Al Capp and Dr. Joyce. I wanted to hear them. You could still do Ring Around the World. They were doing Ring Around the World, and it was all about Vietnam. And there were great reports coming out of Vietnam from NBC correspondents. But yeah, I think that for one thing, here's a sign that NBC was in trauma on the radio network in 69. Until then, on the half hour, Monitor always had a 5-minute music fill right to the very end, which Pat Weaver had put together on the Today Show and on Monitor. Stations could cut away and do local news, or they could stay and do the 5-minute music fill. WNBC rarely did news on the half hour in 1968, even during those monster, horrible months. But in 69, and Louis, you know this, and George, you know this, they did news on the half hour, WNBC, every half hour. And I like it. I like hearing it. But that was an indicator of the change in network thinking.
Sure.
Well, one of the problems was that they were doing, local news on the half hour, and there just wasn't enough local news to fill 5 minutes. And that was the other problem. The other thing is, I think, I was really surprised at how few commercials there were, in the cut-ins on the quarter hour and on the half hour. Because I can remember, I was at WDSU. It wasn't added, but I was, one of those people who was hanging on, for some reason they let me do that. And I remember, they were, especially in the Saturday morning, they were just really filling up all the availabilities, and they were sort of creating some. You could make, spots at 30, and then at 35 or 34 before they went back. And then you'd have the sort of embarrassing thing where, of course, this is not embarrassing to most people because they didn't even notice, but you'd have the people who, you'd have like a Ford spot locally, and then you'd come back and it was a Plymouth spot on the network. And and they're back to back, and you didn't usually have that, not on the network itself, but you couldn't control what the local stations did. So anyway, I don't know, I enjoyed. They just had a lot of spots. I remember that on WDSU, and that was not a big market. It's top 50, but it's not New Orleans. It's not like number one, like in New York. Now, I don't know why they couldn't sell spots, but they.
Well, in 69, they took the tobacco products off the air. So that had to hurt the networks.
Right.
Well, that did. Yeah, that did. But I don't think that was.
Well, that came in 1970, January of 1970.
Right. Right. And the killer for Monitor, because there were great advertisements that the cigarette companies put on Monitor in those years. I mean, there was a lot of it when they introduced new brands, when they, there was a lot of cigarette advertising. Remember, WNBC was the polar opposite of KNBR in San Francisco, which was another NBC O&O. KNBR was wildly successful. I mean, they did a lot of stuff, and you heard a lot of their people on Monitor. WNBC in New York was this mess. They changed formats in the 60s, and you guys know this. Oh, 7, 8, 9 times. I mean, just throw something on the wall, and 3 months later, get rid of it. New disc jockeys, Monitor New York. The big voice of Big Town USA. It was a joke what WNBC was at that point.
Dennis,
Five years. Go ahead.
Dennis, we must have some clips of Monitor we can play. Is it coming up shortly, I hope?
Oh, trust me, Walden's ready.
All right. Whenever you want to jump in, Walden, with some clips we can share with our Monitor audience tonight.
Walden, what that means is George is getting tired of talking.
No. I could go on for days. It's just a little, variety is the spice of life.
But, I've always tried to come up with a new question for Dennis every year. That's something, so that's been a tradition. So let me throw that onto the table.
Yeah, this always concerns me. I get nervous about this because it's something that's so far left field.
Well, we like a challenge.
All right.
All right, here we go. And I think all three of you can answer this for your own sake. What personality or feature that you like the Monitors that NBC hated and killed off?
What features did Monitor have that NBC hated and killed off?
Right. What feature that the public liked it, but the NBC decided to dump it?
Miss Monitor.
That was number one. Okay. Anything else?
Well, what comes to mind that I thought they should have killed is Sport of Speed and the fishing thing. You know.
Sport of Speed was
that
was really narrow interest.
Yeah,
but you know why?
Talk about niche marketing. Sport of Speed and the fishing thing that they had.
But the thing about it was that for years and years and years, Sport of Speed was Pennsylvania grade crude.
And sponsor speaks.
And so that's why they, that was the idea. One of the things that Weaver said was, you could come in and you'd know that if you didn't like something that was on, that you just waited and there would be something different. And that was the idea behind, I think, the way Monitor was programmed, was that you were sort of assured that whatever you disliked wasn't going to be on forever. And now I have to say that they sometimes went on for, I was just listening to Jim Lowe, and he was doing, Monitor did something about Jesus Christ Superstar.
That's right.
And so that was the big deal there. It wasn't really, it was, they would just play it. And it didn't have a lot of, it had a lot of music, but it was of a particular type. And what I remember was, in the fringe hours, like 10 o'clock on the Saturday night, from 10 to 10:30, they would have Henry Morgan was on Saturday night, and Henry hosted.
Well, he was on I've Got a Secret.
Long John Neville. That's it, yeah.
Neville, you're
and, yeah. And they, just reminisced about Neville was saying, gee, I can remember when, you'd walk into a studio and you would have no idea what was going to happen, and you just sit down and start talking. And which I guess he did. He was talking about not excuse himself, but you know, he wanted to say, okay, well, that was the old days. And he said, you know, well, I'm older now, which, like, a
the new Henry Morgan.
Yeah.
Like the new Nixon.
So yeah. here's the flip side of the question then. Mm-hmm. What personality Marner pursued hot and heavy but never got? In terms of maybe either as a guest or somebody they wanted to be a host.
Well, I mean, they would have loved Johnny Carson as a host, but he was never going to do it. That would have been the ultimate get, right? Or Bob Hope as a host, but he was never going
to. Fred Allen.
Well, Fred passed away, though.
Well, yeah, he, you know, when it started, he still had less than 1 year to go, but I would imagine his name was mentioned, but he wasn't.
Oh, it was.
I mean, he was radio all the way. He was trying to dabble in television, but he was limited, you know, his.
You see, when Weaver started this, we had two communicators, and one of them was a straight guy. And then the other was a comedian. And so that's basically the way he was working it. And I know for a fact that he sent a long memo to, who's his executive producer in the beginning?
Jim Fleming.
Jim Fleming, yeah, right. And of course, Jim Fleming, you know, talking about Jim Fleming did the news on the Today Show, as I recall. And so I don't know. I mean, I would have been very interesting to hear, you know, the sort of the nasal tones of, you know, Fred Allen. But that's what the, you know. I don't know. It's really sort of interesting to hear him.
Is there anybody out in Radio Land there gracing our switchboard that might want to add anything or ask any questions?
I don't know. Yeah, no. I don't know if Fred Allen would have worked because he loved the ability to go off script. And would they have allowed him to have the freedom to do that?
Yeah, I think they would. You know, but Henry Morgan went off script.
Constantly. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't. I don't think that was. I think that was
Fred Allen and Henry Morgan were kindred spirits.
Yeah, I don't.
To Weaver,
I don't think.
Henry Morgan was on the original Saturday night and Sunday night programs, doing a report on what you missed on television, which was, it was, you know, there's one on the, I think on the website there somewhere on the website, we've got three clip or four clips that I thought were really, important. One was, Bob and Ray doing, forgotten who, anyway.
Question begs. Were Bob and Ray ever approached to? Communicators other than just adding,
they did at one point.
Comedy bits.
Yeah, they did.
Did they?
Yeah, they were there. Yeah. They were hosts in the early days. Doing the comedy bits. I don't think Fred Allen would have worked because I think he was too droll and too slow. Actually, I think you needed somebody who was going to push the show. Rayburn was great, I think. McMahon pushed.
Oh, yeah, he was bouncing off the walls all the time.
Ted Brown later on bounced it. He was wonderful. But Monitor had to speed up because the culture was speeding up. So by 1970, I understood the need to have hosts who were able to push, because the audience wasn't going to sit there and say, and now coming up, sport of the word. By the way, Don, our friend in L.A., just emailed me. Thank you, Don. He liked Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki. So there.
Oh, well, that's.
So have you looked at the schedule did it from, let's say, 55 to 65 to 75, I'm assuming every show year there's more commercials, so the breaks were probably smaller as the longer monitor was on the air. So that would have been just a change of format just because of the breaks.
The breaks? No, the breaks pretty much stayed the same. In fact, in the early years, in the early days, there were two-minute breaks each half hour at 15 and 45. And in non-network time, it was local station option time. And then they went back to one-minute breaks. It wasn't the breaks that got extended. It was they didn't start the show from 62 on. And Louis, you know this, 61 or 62. They started monitor at 07:40 after the hour instead of 5 after when the news ended to give stations more time.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to give stations more time to induce clearance, and probably it worked for a while. But you know, the reason Lindsay Nelson was doing Monitor Goes Fishing and Kurt Gowdy was doing Monitor Outdoors is because they were sponsored.
Right.
People wanted the voices on the air. And I liked hearing Kurt Gowdy because he was doing the game of the week on Saturdays and he was doing football on Sundays. He was a big name. And so I didn't have a problem with that. The problem I had was when they did the overreaction after 68 and turned it into, for a while, a boring show. And that lost, I'm sure, some listeners out there. But, you know, to each his own, right? The monitor problem throughout the entire history of the show was music. You could never appease all the Italians. You couldn't do it.
I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that the initial broadcast, NBC Television, carried the maiden voyage, at least for the first hour of Monitor. Is that true or false?
True. 4 o'clock Eastern time, NBC TV telecast the Monitor. The first and only time it would be telecast, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was a brilliant promotional ploy by Weaver to show on to the television audience that network radio still existed, and it did. And
they had cameras up on up there in Radio Central, but they had them out in the hallway, and there was this big glass partition where you could look at the people doing the program, and well, they had to take that out because I guess there were reflections, you know, into the cameras from the lights. So they had taken that out.
That poison for those early TV cameras that would.
Well, yeah, but right. And so Bob and Ray mentioned that because they talked about feeding the communicators. And, you know, can you feed the community? Yeah, because there's no glass. And so you could, you know, that was one of the things they said, we don't want you to feed the communicators. And it was real, you know, I mean, they were really off the wall. And I think.
Were all the communicators paid the same, Dennis, or did some have better deals than others?
Good question.
Some had better deals than others. Gene Rayburn had a better deal than somebody working Saturday night, for example. But yeah, they were paid a hell of a lot of money to do the show too, back in those days. Okay. This was a lot of money. Bill Cullen made $500 to do Saturday Afternoon Monitor for 3 hours. Gene Rayburn was making $700 to do Saturday Morning Monitor for 3 hours. Okay, $700 sounds like a lot of money to me right now. In fact, if you guys were to give me $700 for these last 2 hours, I would take it. But let's just see what it was, what it'd be worth today. 700.
50 years ago.
Yeah, 50 years ago. $700, let's say, in 1967 is worth what today? And the answer is, well, here it is, $6,500 to do 3 hours.
Wow.
Monitor. Wow. So they paid the hosts a lot of money and they needed to be good, which is why Rayburn was the best, because he always had the most loaded Saturday morning commercial hours of anybody, and he could drive it. He drove Monitor in those 3 hours, a perfect personality for that.
So what was the staff getting paid behind the scenes, the writers, the producers, roughly? What do you think, Dennis? I mean, we're just trying to ballpark what would be a cost per hour.
$25,000, maybe $30,000, which went a long way. They had a big budget. I mean, it took a lot of people to put that show on the air, folks. A lot of people. And at the end, it probably was losing money because they just couldn't clear it in the markets. By clearing, of course, we mean the station refuses to air it. They do not clear it, which reduces the rates for advertisers. If they can't be heard in Los Angeles or San Francisco, why do they want to spend that kind of money? So it was a circular firing squad for NBC. They lost affiliates, they lost advertisers.
How about that strike they had in April of 1967 when all the management had to fill in at the last minute for all the communicators?
And we have those hours on.
Yes. Yeah.
It's wonderful to hear Steve Lubunsky and Steve White and Bob Maurer, all executives for NBC. And it's great to hear them. And they had the commercial load, the full commercial load. But I'll tell you what, the highlight, you want to talk about commercial success, June 10th and 11th of 1967, when DuPont bought every spot on Monitor that weekend.
The anniversary, 12th anniversary, yes.
$150,000 buy, the biggest buy in network radio history. At that point, Monitor was at its height, and they put everything into that weekend, every personality. It was downhill virtually after that until 1975. It was almost downhill.
So would this been successful? It's, let's say, Sirius XM when it got started, would done Monitor for people to subscribe to?
Oh, I think so. If they'd done that, but it would have cost a lot of money.
Because, right, but considering before they were in such debt structure, they would give it a lot of money away.
Like, well, I mean, how much money did Howard Stern get to go on?
That's what I mean. You know, if you had Howard Stern money, you probably could finance Monitor on Sirius XM.
It would take Sirius to put Monitor on the air.
Right, so you wouldn't have to worry about clearance issues.
That's correct. That is correct. I'd listen. Listen, I have Sirius. I have 150 channels of Sirius in my car.
Right.
Two or three. My favorite is 60s gold, okay? Followed by 70s on 7. That's my favorite. But there's something for everybody on Sirius. There's no NBC anymore. CBS is nothing. ABC is nothing. Nobody can afford to do Monitor now. Nobody could, tragically. I thought you were going to ask me, Walden, who I would put as Monitor host now. I even pushed you on the question.
Wow. Well, you know me. I always try to do something we haven't talked about. So
Pat Sajak is available.
But years ago, I mentioned Pat Sajak, and I also mentioned Alex Trebek. But
what about Ryan Seacrest? Would he work?
No.
Well, he's taken now. He's filling in for Pat Sajak.
I'm thinking of the name host today.
He's not on NBC, and he wouldn't do that. But yeah, I have. Now, bear in mind, I came up with these names. These are all people who work for NBC. Let's just assume they have to work for NBC, okay? Let's also assume that the new Monitor has to be interactive, and it has to respond to every major breaking news story in the world, right? So you have people on the air who can respond intelligently to news while you're still doing the features, you're still doing a little bit of the music. Okay, you guys, you ready? Here, where's the drum roll on this deal?
The drum roll.
My Saturday morning Monitor host would be Willie Geist. He's the host of Saturday Today.
Yes.
He's quick. He does news. He's funny. He could do it. You guys agree? George, you agree with that one?
Yes.
Okay. My Saturday afternoon host, and I'm trying to get somebody in the vein of Ed McMahon, who pushed it. Good voice. Peter Alexander. Do you know who that is?
Where's he employed right now?
They're all at NBC. He's the White House correspondent.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Saturday night.
And you think that he would want to host a program?
Oh, no. Here's the deal. If I were doing Monitor, if I were at NBC and I wanted this show to succeed, I'd say it's not a matter, Peter, if you're wanting to do it, you're going to do it. Because that's what Pat Weaver said. You're going to do it to Dave Garraway. You have to do it, okay? Part of the deal. And we're going to pay you money to do it. We're paying you money, okay? So both of these guys can handle breaking news, right? They can handle it. Here's my Saturday night host. Here you guys, this is not going to be as left-fieldy as you think. I want it to be somebody who's entertaining, who's fun, but could still do news. Jenna Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect Saturday.
Wow. Yeah.
She could do it. She'd be vivacious. She could handle breaking news. Sunday afternoon, Tom Lamas. Do you know who that is?
Yes, he's with NBC now. He started with ABC. He's a fill-in host on the weekends.
And he's Lester Holt's backup. Yes, he is.
Correct.
So the way you get Tom Lamas to do it is you make him the Sunday evening nightly news host. That airs live at 6:30, monitors off at 6 o'clock. He just goes, takes the elevator.
And goes. Yeah.
Now, my Sunday night host, Sunday night's always been kind of the news wrap-up of the week, whether it's been McGee or Brad Crandall or Frank Blair.
Durwood Kirby for a while.
Hallie Jackson.
Yes.
What do you think about all the all working for NBC? They're all on news, and they're all going to say, I don't want to do radio. And I'm going to say, yes, you're going to want to do it.
All have possibility. I'm familiar with just about all of the ones that you have enumerated.
They could all do, we're going to introduce Monitor Goes Fishing or whatever the equivalent is. If Hamas invaded Israel, they could all take that. They could all do
fill
it.
Fill in, yeah. Jump in at the last minute.
What do you think, Walden?
I think you got a possibility, but I'm wondering, would they have to pay some money to get some big-name guests? I mean...
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, I'm thinking, what would you have to pay Taylor Swift to show up on Monitor?
Oh.
Well, you probably wouldn't get Taylor Swift to show up on Monitor. And you don't want to pay her to do it anyway.
He's already a billionaire.
Right. But that's what I'm just saying. I mean, attract the female audience. I'm thinking you're going to need somebody like that.
I'd put Hallie Jackson in and Jenna Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have somebody who's giving some advice like Joyce Brothers did. You need to have You need to have a wacky commentator, funnier than Al Capp was. Capp did some good stuff, but you know, you need to have a big name sports guy like Dowdy or Mel Ellen doing something or Garagio.
Well, you know, I'll work for food.
I know you will. What's your gig? What do you do?
Shtick.
Yeah.
Now, something Joyce would be doing, can you imagine? Nowadays, with today's technology, they'll be releasing a Monitor podcast. That's fairly...
Well, with artificial intelligence, you can do just about anything anymore. You can recreate voices of people that died 100 years ago.
I don't think the podcast would work, though, because you need to have a giant audience, and you're just not going to get that with a podcast. I think you got to be on a major network. Or a serious thing. I really
But I'm just saying, I'm saying it'll be a derivative from a network, though. That's what I'm saying, Dennis. It'll be, because generally, most everybody's now, let's face it, in the old days, they all threw away their archives. Now they record everything and keep it. It's a totally different philosophy.
Well, the world's changed. You know, the technology's changed. 80 years ago, suppose it's 1935, you had three networks. You had CBS and you had NBC Blue and Red, and that was it, and Mutual 4. And, you know, that's where you got all your entertainment and news from. The pie's been carved up so many ways. You know, each pie's been carved up 10,000 different little slices. And you got this thing called time shifting, and you got the internet. You can pick and choose what you want to hear, what you want to see, when, you know, so you're not limited by the technology anymore.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, George, would somebody who had the deep pocket try to make a video monitor of today's generation?
Well, no, it just couldn't fly anymore.
I agree.
You've got to provide to the audience what during that time frame of your existence. You know, what worked in the 1950s is not going to work in the 2020s. I mean, the honeymooners won't work on television anymore, you know?
Well, but you know, they did do a monitor on television at one point, one hour.
Yeah, but you're not
gonna, 1 hour,
you're not going to do a monitor on television. You're going to do a monitor on radio on Sirius XM, and they can
well get... What's the advantage? Okay, this is an interesting question. What is the advantage of television or radio over television?
Portability.
It's instantaneous. I mean, with television you gotta provide the cameras. Radio is a lot faster and more instantaneous. And television, you know, is technological.
Because you can use a phone?
Yes.
Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I attended a meeting yesterday about where they think broadcasting going. And it's definitely mobile, and it's definitely they're backing people to be more interactive, playing games, things like that on touch screen in their car.
Well, that's the deal. It's not broadcasting anymore. It's narrowcasting. I mean, you got right. these little niches that you cater to. It's not a mass audience, you know, where Jack Benny got like, 75% of any listening audience on a Sunday night. You know, that will never happen again.
That's right. But the advantage of radio over television is obvious. The radio is in your car. You're not going to watch television while you're going down the street, and you won't live very long if you do.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, monitor was perfect for weekends because you could take it everywhere in the country, and we did. My parents did. And so many people wrote to the website.
So yeah, my mom still remembers it, after all these years. Yeah.
This monitor would have to be highly interactive, highly reactive to what was going on, and that's why I picked these guys. Do I think they would willingly do it? No, I don't think so. But that's where the network people would have to come in and say, you get to do 3 hours on a Saturday. That's part of the deal. Look, Willie Geist comes off the air on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. He goes on to monitor at 9 o'clock, the new monitor. Hallie Jackson, no, who is it? Hallie Jackson would be hosting Nightly News right after she gets off the air. I'm sorry, Tom Lawless would be hosting Nightly News at 6:30 on Sunday, right after he gets off the air on monitor. You could make it work. It would be very strange, but you could make it work.
Yeah, but you're not including any time for preparation, though. You expect these people to come in and
they just go
from one thing.
They just go in and read.
What is that?
The anchors just come in and read the news. They don't have anything to do with Nightly News, so just read it.
Wait. You're saying that if somebody came in, Willie Geist, let's say,
yes,
at 9 o'clock,
yes,
on Saturday morning,
yes,
all he's going to be doing is reading?
Well, he'd be hosting.
Yeah, I know, but there's no preparation.
Well, Garraway never did preparation. He hammered it out.
Well, I know, but Garraway is a different story. You know?
Well, gentlemen, the bottom line is you can't go home. There's no turning back anymore. Monitor.
No.
It was Monitor for its historical time slot in history, and you'll never have a monitor again, no matter how hard you try.
Well, I'm also sort of wondering also the economics, Dennis. For example, I think in KNX, most of the reporters are all part-timers.
Yes.
It's the economy of broadcasting or narrowcasting.
I'm not saying this could ever work. I'm just saying those are the guys I would have.
Right.
Wanted to make it work. For the reasons
you speak of narrowcasting, we're speaking of the narrowest of narrow right now doing a podcast. I mean, it doesn't get any thinner than that.
Yeah.
Can we go up here? Are we there?
What is that? Well, I don't know.
It was fun when it lasted, wasn't it, guys?
Yeah, but you had a lot of people doing continuity and things like that, and
it's just a shame so much of this is locked up in the Library of Congress, and you got to pay big money for it if you want to get access to it. The stuff that's that was broadcast free over the airwaves, and now they got it. NBC donated all their lacquer transcriptions 40-50 years ago, 150,000 transcription discs, many of which is probably Monitor, and in order to hear it again, you've got to contact, go through layers and layers of bureaucracy and, part with wads of money to, get clearance for it so they can make you a cheesy little audio tape that they can send to you for confiscatory amounts of money so you can hear it again, that very stuff that you used to hear for free.
Yep. And that's the beauty, one more time, of the website. We're getting close to Monitor, folks, so hang in there. You're going to hear it. It's free of charge.
Good, good.
750 hours, monitorbeacon.net. We want to hit 500,000 visits this month. We're like 900 away, okay? You've been supporting us wonderfully. No money. It's all free. The website, monitorbeacon.net. The book, Monitor, take two. And Louie and George, I have loved being here tonight with you guys again.
Yes, I loved every minute of it.
Can we do it again next year, Walden?
All right, yeah.
Put me down. Year. Sign me up.
Sign me up.
All righty, guys. We'll do it again.
Stay tuned. What do you play at first, Monitor? Do you know, Walden? Which one?
Well, I was thinking I was going to. I have the Crandall one queued up first.
Right. Sunday Night Monitor, the last hour of their anniversary show, you're going to hear Steve.
Yeah, that's going to get queued up first. Right.
Monitor song written by Jimmy Van Heusen and Sammy Kahn all weekend long at Radio Central.
It's sung by Steve
Lawrence.
Lawrence.
Who just passed away. Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, poor Steve.
Yeah.
And it's a great, folks, you've got, what time is it across the country here? It's after midnight.
I have 11:21 Central Standard Time.
Yeah.
Then you've got about 3.5.
Correction, Central Daylight Time.
We'll get it all in. We'll get a bunch of it in. So
get it in. We're going to get off the air here.
Guys. Thanks for everything. We'll talk next
year. Thanks, Walter. I'll be in touch with you.
Sound great, George. Take care.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Louis.
Bye.
Okay.
And remember, the shows don't quite run an hour, so you might get them all in, or you may need to go over so
well. The last time I played them, I said about 45 minutes or so. We'll see, I guess.
All right. Do you want to go ahead and just play them?
So should I just go ahead and rip them? You're streaming, right, John?
I'm streaming, yeah. So just go ahead and play them, and when you get off the air, you get off the air.
All right. We'll let it rip.
Sounds good.
All right, John.
Okay.
Take care, everybody. Here we go.
It's 9:00. NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by DuPont Golden 7, the oil treatment that makes cars take off like a whisper. Here's Carl Stern. Listen again on the Hour when DuPont Golden 7 brings you NBC Monitor News. This is WNBC FM New York.
Hi, this is Woody Herman. On behalf of myself and the Swingin' Herd, happy birthday, Monitor, on your 12th anniversary.
Thanks, Woody. And once again, a welcome to the weekend world of Monitor, presented on this 12th birthday by DuPont Auto Products, makers of Golden 7 oil treatment and 42 other fine car care products. I'm Brad Crandall, and when Monitor is 24 years old, your everyday life at home and on the road will be made dramatically more simple by electronic aids. An expert tells it all about it just 4 minutes from now.
The moonlight marks the silver sand.